shooting from the lip.
We're taking no prisoners here. Real opinions for real people.
John Gaunt, shooting from the lip.
Hi, good afternoon and welcome to another edition of Shooting from the Lip with me, John Gaunt, here on Sputnik International. Got a great guest for you, and he's the right guest this week. It's Jared Batten. He's the leader of UKIP. We're going to be talking about this Brexit pantomime, as I've characterised it. We're going to talk about the lads' football march. We're going to talk about Tommy Robinson, and we're going to talk about the BBC, and in particular, the way the BBC duffed up Jared Batten earlier this week. It's all to come. He's a man who does shoot from his lip. It is the leader of UKIP. It is Jared Batten.
Shooting from the lip.
Good afternoon, Jared.
Hello, Johnny, and good afternoon to all your listeners.
Great to have you on board again, because you did our first show, so thank you for joining us today. Now, we're recording this Friday evening whilst these Brexit negotiations, pantomime, whatever, continue. What's happened? What do you think's going to happen? And are we being betrayed?
What's happening is really what I predicted, Johnny. I said that there would be delay, they would impede the whole thing in order to sell us out at the end of the process. It was supposed to be, I was told that there might be a withdrawal agreement agreed in Brussels this week. That hasn't happened. Now they're saying it's going to go on to November or even December. What they'll do is delay this as long as possible in order to, at the last minute, pull out of the hat this not really leaving the EU withdrawal agreement, whereby, we continue to pay them lots of money, obey lots of their laws, be under the jurisdiction of the European Court of Justice and have more or less open borders, and then tell us it's a great diplomatic triumph. And by that time, Mrs. May hopes she'll have bludgeoned everybody into insensitivity because they're so fed up with listening to this. And somehow she'll manage to slip it past everybody, including her own, alleged Brexiteers in the Tory party. So I'm expecting a sellout.
But do you think it's actually all been choreographed? That in a way, it's already been decided? Is this just a pantomime we're seeing now?
It looks like it to me. I mean, it looks like an elaborate charade that's gone on. And it's like some kind of, dance that they come towards each other and go away and come back again. Either it is an elaborate charade or they're completely and totally incompetent, i.e. our government. Which is it? I don't know. Either case is believable. But what I've always said is that the European Union is never going to offer us this mythical good deal because it has no incentive to do so. It doesn't want us to leave. So why, you can't negotiate with someone that doesn't want what you're, you're asking them. Mrs. Merkel said this to Mrs. May. Why do you keep coming and asking us to offer you something? You're the one that wants to leave. Tell us what you want. That's the way it should work. The British government should have said, we want to leave. This is how it's going to work. And this is what we are offering you.
So if Jared Batten had been in the room, what would you have been asking for? Or would you not be in the room in the first place? Is the whole Article 50 thing nonsense?
Well, what I would have said to them is, let's just play fantasy prime minister for a minute. If I'd have been taken over after the referendum, I would have immediately put a bill before Parliament to repeal the 1972 European Communities Act. I would have gone to the EU and said, we've repealed this act. We've left under our law. We're legally no longer members of the European Union. But never mind, because all law stays in place because there's thousands upon thousands of pieces of legislation. The repeal bill keeps it in place. We're going to start now repealing it and amending it in accordance with our own priorities. And tell you what we're going to do. We're going to offer you continued tariff-free trade. You can have everything except the free movement of people. If you don't want that, oh, fair enough, we'll go on to WTO terms and we can decide all that fairly quickly. We're going to offer you a reciprocal deal on citizens' rights. So, and believe me, they're getting the better end of this deal because what they can get in our country, we can't get in most European countries. But we'll say, okay, reciprocal deal on citizens' rights. And we're not going to pay you any more money because you're not entitled to any. But never mind, you've had a hell of a lot out of us over the past 40-odd years. And we're not going to ask for any of our assets back, any of our investment in all the things that we've helped you build, because we know you're never going to give it to us, so let's just cut our losses. And then we're going to start looking at other things on our priority list, like the standardisation of wine glasses or something. We'll forget about that. We might look at that in 10, 20 years' time. It's not important. But we'll work through our priorities. We want trade, friendship and cooperation. And obviously you want that too, because you sell us far more than we sell you. So I'm sure you'll cooperate with us, won't you?
Unfortunately, none of that happened, and that was fantasy, as you say. But what do we do now? Will you be polishing your dancing shoes if we get a no deal? Is it going to be a no deal, or is it going to be a stitch-up?
Well, this whole no deal thing is another false argument. There never was going to be a deal, or there's going to be a deal we don't want, which is what we're heading towards now. If there is no deal, then we just leave, and they're going to have to do what I just described to you. I think now the time for a tariff-free trade deal has passed now. We've spent wasted two years. Now we just say, well, we're leaving on WTO terms, which actually would be beneficial to us. The EU doesn't want us to do this because it wouldn't particularly be beneficial to them. And I think that I don't think that's going to happen, because I don't think Mrs. May has got a clue what to do in those circumstances. So I think that, you know, I don't want to say this, but I think we're heading for this not really leaving the EU withdrawal agreement, in which case we're going to need UKIP more than ever, because we are the only opposition to this. And there needs to be a political party that people can vote for if they really do want to leave the EU properly.
OK, let's go on to that in a moment. Let's just go back to also, I want to go back to Boris Johnson and Rees-Mogg and David Davis. Why aren't any of them plunging the political knife into her? How is she managing to cling on when nobody wants checkers? The EU, the cabinet, certainly grassroots Tories. How is she clinging on? Why isn't somebody delivering the fatal blow?
Because I would guess that what she's saying, and this is the other thing I've been saying for a long time, her message to them, and maybe even the country, if there was a general election over this, is to say, I tell you what, you can have me and my not really leaving the EU agreement, or you can have Jeremy Corbyn and his Marxist thugs. Which do you prefer? And that's not much of a choice, is it? So, and as for the so-called Tory Brexiteers, they will never go against their own party. Their first loyalty is always to their own party and its survival rather than the country. Never mind what they say. Look at what they do, and that's what they always do.
OK, so where does UKIP play into this, Gerard? Because some people say you've taken your eye off the ball, you've been too interested in the Islam or the Islamist question and not been enough of a pressure group about Brexit. How do you answer that charge?
Well, only one political party in this country actually wrote an EU exit plan, and that plan was written by me. I wrote a little book on this back in 2014 before the referendum, in which I said if there was a referendum, what would happen, how it would play out if we won the Leave vote. I then worked that up into an exit plan because Paul Nutter, who was then the leader, appointed me as the Brexit spokesman. So I want to talk about it, but the mainstream media doesn't want to talk about UKIP's plan because they know it's the only way that we would ever leave the EU, by taking the initiative in this, or the government taking the initiative and telling the EU how it's going to work. So it's not that I haven't been talking about it, it's that the mainstream media doesn't want to talk about it with UKIP, me, or, you know, anybody else in UKIP. They don't want to say that there is another way to do it. Look what we've had from the mainstream media for the last 2 years on the BBC, on Sky, a relentless drip, drip, drip propaganda campaign telling us how awful it all is and how it can't happen and you won't be able to buy sandwiches, you know, out of the high street anymore because you won't be able to get the ingredients. It's reached absurd levels of scaremongering. And that's what they do. That's what they do. They want to actually bludgeon people into a state of mind where people think it's not possible to leave, it can't happen, and they all kind of give up in despair. I don't think that's going to happen, actually. I think there's going to be a massive backlash from the British public.
Do you think there'll be civil unrest?
No, I'm not saying that's going to happen. But, you know, we live in a democracy. People have to rebel by voting, by putting their cross on a piece of paper. That's very difficult under our first-past-the-post system because, like I said, you get the alternative choice of two things you may not want very much, but you won't vote for the thing you fear least. If we had a fair voting system, a proportional representation voting system, UKIP would be in the position that Five Star are in Italy, I think. You know, we'd be part of the government because people are fed up with the status quo. They don't like what's happening to them. But at the moment, they have this choice every time an election comes around. Oh, we don't really like the Tories, but we hate Labour more. Or we don't really like Labour, but we hate the Tories more. And so people end up voting for that which they fear or hate the least.
But do you think you're ever going to get back to 4 million votes?
I don't think that's impossible. I mean, I don't know. I can't foretell the future. All I know is that we're right about the Brexit issue. We're right about other issues. And back last February, we were expected to disappear completely. I mean, literally to go bust and close down. That didn't happen. We're still here. We're putting on more members. We're raising money. We're not doing badly in the polls.
But you're not in double figures, are you? And well, some people, let me finish, Jared. Some people say that's because you haven't got the Farage factor and that you should step aside sooner rather than later and let him come back. What do you say?
Well, two things on that. First of all, the highest vote we got in a general election was in 2015, and that was 12.6, I think, something like that, percent. The poll of polls that I saw most recently put us on about 6.3%. So we're halfway there. 6.3% would do incredible damage in marginal seats in a general election. And that's where general elections are fought. That's where the people who count the numbers in the Labour Party and the Tory Party actually take notice, because that's where, as I said, that's where elections are fought in marginal seats. They know we could do them a great deal of damage just on 6.3%. I'm aiming to build that percentage up. Whether about Nigel coming back, well, Nigel is free to say he wants to come back if he wants to. He's never said that. In fact, quite the opposite. He said he doesn't want to be leader anymore. If you go back to when I took over back in February, March, he was talking about setting up another political party with Aaron Banks. Do you remember that?
Yep.
Now he said he's giving 100% of his effort to Leave Means Leave, which is a pressure group. Well, we had pressure groups for 40-odd years. We had the Anti-Common Market League. We had the Campaign for an Independent Britain. Mm. Pressure groups never achieve anything, because the only thing that matters to politicians is votes. A political party can take their votes away. A pressure group can't do that. So pressure groups are pointless. If Nigel wanted to come back, all he's got to do is say, when the next UKIP leadership election comes around, I'd like to run as a candidate. No one's stopping him if that's what he wants to do.
Would you stand aside for him?
No, I'm not standing aside for anybody. I said I took over as interim leader for 3 months. I was elected unopposed for 12 months because I said I'll do it. I need to sort the party's problems out. I can't do that in 3 months. I'll do it for 12 months as for a limited term. And at the end of that, I'll decide whether I want to run again, and you can decide whether I've succeeded or not.
Well, it sounds like you've already decided. You're carrying on. Is that right?
I honestly haven't made a decision. I'm very happy with the way things are going. If I thought it was a complete disaster at this stage, if we were losing thousands of members and we had no money and the polling was going down, I'd say, well, I'm obviously not succeeding. About time I stood down. The opposite of that is happening. All of those indicators are actually going up. So it seems to me that I'm doing the right things.
OK, let's talk about your tactics then. You have concentrated on the Islam issue. What do you say to the charge that that means you've kind of moved away from UKIP's normal grounds, which is Brexit and the EU, and that's damaging the party? Why are you so obsessed with Islam?
Well, first of all, if you look at what I've done in the years over UKIP, I've very much concentrated on the EU. I was the first person to actually try and work out a comprehensive cost of the EU, how much it was costing us. I did an enormous amount of work on the immigration policy in the EU, on the criminal justice legislation that comes out of the EU. I've written pamphlets about it. I've written loads of stuff about it. And, of course, on Brexit, I was, as I said to you, I'm the only person in a political party who sat down and tried to write an exit plan. So I don't think if I'm obsessed with anything, God help me, it's been the EU over the last...
Yes, but just recently, come on, Jared, be straight with me. It's Islam, 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 Islam.
No, what happens, Johnny, is that I have said something. I didn't have really great much interest in the finer points of Islam before the 2005 bombings went off. And then I was the security and defence spokesman for the party, and I thought, well, I'd better find out a bit more about it. So I have, I've done a lot of research on it, and therefore I've commented on it. But people ask me all the time. You know, I go on shows now, you're going to come onto this, I think, about the BBC last Friday, when I'm invited on to talk about Brexit and whatever, and then they attack me relentlessly on Islam or Tommy Robinson. And, of course, I answer their questions. I don't try to evade their questions. But they don't want to talk about my ideas on Brexit because it might actually gain some resonance with the general public. So they prefer to try and attack me on that, on these other subjects.
But then you do answer, don't you? And you talk about it being the cult of Muhammad. I mean, you don't talk about it in very nice language.
That was because I don't like it, Johnny. Why should I? It's an ideology. If you ask me my comments on Nazism or communism, I wouldn't be complimentary about those either, because I don't like totalitarian ideologies, which is what Islam is. And if it was like really benevolent and caused wonderful living conditions and social benefits wherever it was practiced, I might say, well, you know, maybe they got a point. But it doesn't. It's horrific wherever it's practiced. So why should I be nice about it? I mean, why would anybody want to if they're not actually part of it?
Okay, you're listening to The John Gaunt Show. It's Shooting from the Lip. It's on Sputnik International. My guest is Jared Batten. We're going to go on to talk about Tommy Robinson, the BBC scrapping the licence fee and Muslim-only prisons. Don't dare go away. We'll be back after this short break.
Shooting from the Lip.
We're taking no prisoners here. Real opinions for real people.
John Gaunt. Shooting from the Lip.
Welcome back to Shooting from the Lip with me, John Gaunt. My special guest today, of course, is the leader of UKIP, Jared Batten. We've talked about the EU. We've been talking about Islam just a moment ago. That leads naturally into my next question, which is Tommy Robinson back in court next week. Jared, do you expect him to go to prison?
Honestly, don't know on that, because if they were going to do the sensible thing, they'd say, well, you know, even if they find that he was in contempt of court, and I think that's arguable, even if their judge found that, they might do the sensible thing and say, well, he's already served a few months in prison on this, so we'll say time served, go away, don't do it again. If they decide that they are, and I understand in this that the judges actually introduced two more charges.
Yeah.
Well, that's a bit odd, because I didn't think judges could charge people with things. I mean, I'm not a lawyer. I'm not an expert on contempt of court law. But it would seem odd that at this stage of the game, a judge decides that two more charges can be laid. I thought that was the province of the Crown Prosecution Service or the Attorney General. So that seems a bit odd.
So do you think he is an establishment kind of political prisoner? Is that what he's being turned into?
He's been harassed by the police. If you read his book, I'd recommend anyone to read it to get his side of the argument, The Enemy of the State. The things that have been done to him are unbelievable. You know, he did 10 months in prison for travelling to America on somebody else's passport. Well, OK, he shouldn't have done it, but it's not exactly a big crime. But he got 10 months in prison, and he was, for a large part of that, he was in solitary confinement, where, you know, that is, there's supposed to be a very limited time that people can spend in solitary confinement, because obviously it's not meant to be a pleasant experience and people can go a bit stir crazy.
So he is a political prisoner in that respect. Is he going to join UKIP? I was speaking to him last week. What's your view? What's the latest news? And do you want him in? You do want him in, don't you? You as an individual?
Well, I have voiced a personal opinion here, Johnny, and said that personally, I would like to have him join if that's what he wants to do. I believe that he would like to do. But I realise it's a divisive thing and it would have to be decided by the members as a whole. If it happens, my opinion is that there should be a poll of the membership, all of the membership, to ask them if that's what they want. That would have to be decided and organised by the National Executive Committee of the party. I'm not a dictator, and I wouldn't want to in this instance, because I think it's such a big issue that it needs to be decided by the party in a democratic way.
But clearly you think he would bring votes.
Yeah, I think that he is a genuine representative of, you know, for all his faults, and I'm not saying that he's faultless, of ordinary kind of working class people.
Okay. Do you worry, though, that would then, these accusations of racism and anti-Islam would only grow? I mean, you got duffed up last Friday. Let's talk about that BBC interview with Joe Coburn. What happened there? I've watched it, but what was that all about?
Well, you are going to be called names by the establishment, by the mainstream media, because they do not want people like me or people like him to talk about the things that we talk about, which we feel are important to the ordinary voters out there.
Which are?
Well, for example, about how we should leave the European Union, about how we do combat extremist and literalist Islam.
Rape gangs?
Which is an ideology. And Tommy's very, very involved in the talking about the rape gangs, which is a kind of industrialised sexual slavery of very vulnerable girls that's going on all across the country. What happened on the Politics Live, and don't forget, I've done Daily Politics many times with Andrew Neil and with Joe Coburn. They always send you a list of topics that they intend to discuss. Normally, I even get that on an email. You know, this is the kind of ground we want to cover.
Sure.
Sometimes it doesn't work out that way because it's, you know, a bit free-flowing. Things come up. But you always get an idea. They don't spring it on you completely unawares. I was asked to go on, said to my press officer, OK, what do they want to talk about? It'll be about Brexit, about UKIP and what's happening in the news, and Tommy Robinson will probably come up. So I said, OK. I got there. I'm outside watching the show from out in the corridor. It was all about Brexit. I thought, they're not going to want to go over Brexit again, are they, when I get in there? So I was expecting something different to happen, and it did. It was a relentless attack on me regarding Tommy Robinson and my views on Islam. And even I was shocked, to be honest, and I don't expect any favours from the mainstream media, but even I was shocked at the sheer bias and relentless partiality of the whole thing, which ended up with her accusing me of promoting violence against people. And you can watch that clip, it's on the internet, which was, a lot of people have made complaints. I got one in front of me, actually. Do you mind if I just go read you a little bit of it?
Oh, very quickly, because I want
somebody
to...
Somebody who emailed me. OK. And this is the reply they got back from the BBC regarding this. It was a tough interview, blah, blah. Mr. Batten himself has spent a great deal of time talking about Tommy Robinson and Islam. No, I haven't. I've spent a great deal of time answering the questions that people like that put to me. I have never volunteered views on Tommy Robinson on the mainstream media, but they relentlessly asked me, which is why I said to her, if you want to know about him, why don't you ask him on? Have him on the show. And then they say Mr. Batten suggested the interviewer had actually been invited on the programme to talk about Brexit and that some way he was ambushed. Yeah, I was invited on to talk about Brexit and I was ambushed, but they're denying that that ever happened. That's what you get out of the BBC.
Are you going to take that further?
No, I'm not going to do anything about it. I mean, people have made complaints to the BBC. I've been complaining to them for years when they describe people as far right. They've described Geert Wilders in the Netherlands as far right. I've written letters to them saying, on what basis do you call him far right? He's a democratic politician.
Let's talk about that at the moment. Do you think that is happening then, that anybody on the right is now described as far right? UKIP are described as far right. We've got this Democratic Lads football march at the weekend where Mark Phillips, who's a youth team coach for West Ham, he's been suspended from his job and is now under investigation for going on a march. Well, they're not a banned organisation. UKIP's not a banned organisation. Tommy Robinson isn't. Do you think there's a clampdown on free speech for the right?
Well, you see, I don't regard myself as right. I've been to DFLA events. They're not right wing. It's about what's right and what's wrong, and you have a point of view. It's not about right wing, but anyone now that doesn't fall in line with the prevailing politically correct consensus is called far right, which conjures up connotations of fascism and Nazism. But of course, anyone that's far left doesn't get bothered, do they? You know, you've got Corbyn and his thugs out with their anti-Semitic meetings where they won't let Jews in. And one happened last night where an elderly 70-year-old Jewish lady got kicked and someone else got kicked in the head at a pro-Palestinian Labour-sponsored event in London. There's going to be stuff on the internet about that. Don't see the mainstream media bothered too much about that. They're not bothering themselves about...
What did you make of the DFLA march then this weekend on Saturday? There was violence there. Antifa were there, Hope Not Hate were there, but there was definitely violence. I saw it.
Yeah, and I wasn't there myself, but I spoke to somebody who was one of the organisers on Monday, and they said they had a very good relationship with the police. The police knew that these anti-fascist fascists were going to turn up, so it was agreed that they would keep them away from the DFLA. And in actual fact, that didn't happen. They were allowed to get close to them. The DFLA actually then were stopped from marching. They were kettled in after, they began to get uneasy about that. The police let small groups out in different times and places, and they ended up clashing with the anti-fascist fascists, who carry sticks and have masks. And in fact, it was them that instigated the violence and not the DFLA.
What's your view on people going on those marches? I mean, do you think if you go on a march like that, you should be suspended from work? That it could be...
Well, you're right. This is about free speech. It's about free association and what you can and can't. They're not breaking any laws. You know, if they go out on a march, and even if you had a march of several thousand people and a few people turn up who want to punch up, that doesn't invalidate the decent values and of all the vast majority of people who went out on that event. So, no, I don't. They've got a perfect right to do that. If they'd have been caught being filmed instigating violence, that's a different matter because that's public order offence. And that might have some implications for your job and what you do. But if you've just turned up on a march, that's your business. It's not your employer's business.
OK, now let's go back to the BBC, because it's kind of all connected then. I mean, today the BBC have announced they want to scrap the free licence fee for the over-75s. I mean, I just say cut out the middleman. Let's scrap the BBC licence fee totally. Where do you stand on it?
Well, you'll be pleased to know that it's a UKIP policy in my new manifesto that we are going to scrap the BBC licence fee and make it a subscription service. So if people want to pay for propaganda from the BBC, then they can choose to spend the money if they
and
don't want
to. And you do think it's propaganda, do you?
Yeah, I mean, I've been watching the BBC for, 55 years. You know, I started off with Bill and Ben and then moved up through, through news and current affairs. I got a great deal of my education from watching BBC. And I can't watch most of the mainstream media broadcasts now, BBC, Sky. I just... can't watch Channel 4 at all. It's so atrocious. I mean, I watch the news to get the main bulletins. Where's there been an earthquake or some major event that I need to know about? And then I turn over. It is relentless propaganda. It's done in the way that they present stories, the words that they use, what they leave out, what they don't tell you about. And it is now relentless propaganda. You're meant to think in a certain way, and you're being channeled and corralled that way all the time. And if you have opposing views, of course, you get called names.
Okay, so you want to scrap it completely. It's now official policy. Let's just have a quick thing about Muslim-only prisons. Is this true that you were advocating Muslim-only prisons and some people are saying that's the beginning of concentration camps? What's the truth?
Well, that was a marvellous leap of imagination on LBC by Majid Nawaz, wasn't it, to call me that? No, what I said in our manifesto was we have a real problem in prisons whereby people are being forcibly converted to Islam because they're in fear of their lives and injury. Now, because of Mrs. May's devastation of the prison service by a lack of resources, the prisoners tend to run the prisons. And, of course, a lot of them are now under the sway of Muslim extremist gangs. So what I said was, where Muslim prisoners are literalists and extremists and are doing this, they should be segregated, so different parts of the prison, or, if necessary, we would have prisons just for those people. If an ordinary Muslim prisoner minding his own business, doing his time, isn't bothering anybody else, then, leave him alone, let him be in the rest of the prison population.
OK, Anjan Chowdhury coming out this week. What do you make of that?
Has he still got dual citizenship? Because I'm not sure. If he has got dual citizenship with somewhere else, we should take his citizenship away and deport him back where he comes from.
And if he hasn't?
Should he be out? I mean, I can't remember now what sentence he got, but most people
Six
now
years.
Only serve 50% of their time anyway. And another thing I think that we should do is to stop that. There's no point in giving someone a 10-year sentence and they serve 5 years. We should go back to the system whereby people serve their sentence and about 10% can be given as time off for good behaviour if the prison governor and an independent assessor actually decides that they've been good boys and girls and they deserve a bit of leeway on that.
I've got to finish now, but just before I do, what do you make of the treatment by the government of what's happened in this embassy in Turkey with the Saudi Arabia, and compare and contrast that to the Skripal story and the demonisation of Russia? That's perhaps my twist on it, but what do you think?
Well, first of all, the Russian bit. The Russian regime under Putin is a gangster regime. They do kill people abroad. They've been doing it since 1923. They've had a poison factory set up which devises poisons where they kill their enemies abroad. There's nothing new about that. And the current regime is just a gangster regime which continues not very efficiently some of the time, the old practices of the KGB. Mm-hmm. In terms of what happens in Saudi Arabia, of course, the government can't afford to upset Saudi Arabia because it's a bit dependent on them so much economically. They have an enormous wealth because they've accumulated so many millions and trillions of euro dollars over the last 50 years. They own large sections of our media, of our universities, their banks. So the government can't upset them.
Well, that's double standards, isn't it? Isn't that double standards?
Yeah. But what do you do? if they really got shirty with the Saudis, all the Saudis have got to do is threaten them with a bit of economic sanctions back, and the government will be terrified of the ramifications of that. The only way out of that solution is to stop being dependent upon oil, and that's going to take a long time. The Americans, under Bush started this, and Trump's carried it on, where they're trying to become more self-sufficient in energy so that they're not dependent upon Saudi Arabia and the Middle East. We would solve a lot of problems if we could solve that problem overnight, which we can't do. But we ought to be working towards it with new forms of energy so that we're not transferring all this money to these kind of dark age barbaric countries and giving them this enormous power over us.
Well, one thing's for certain, Jared, no one could accuse you of not shooting from the lip. Thank you for being my guest today. That was Jared Batten. He's the leader of the UKIP party. He's the man who is shooting from the lip today with me, John Gaunt, on Sputnik. Next week, we'll have another equally controversial and outspoken guest for you to listen to. But for the moment, that's the end of Shooting from the Lip for today.
Shooting from the Lip.
If you've got a view, I want to hear it. If you agree, I want to hear it. If you disagree, get in touch. tell me why I'm wrong, but you better have a good argument.
This is Shooting From The Lip.